Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Hats off to super producer Stevie Z that finds a rocking out version to Wheels on the Bus. Why are we talking about the Wheels on the Bus, Jeff Munn? There's a bus driver shortage around the country, and it's impacting us a lot here in Arizona. But the wheels on the bus do go round and round, and the horn on the bus goes beep, 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 beep. I love this!
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah!
Sounds like
Ron Wolfley.
Yes, exactly.
Can I ask a question? Who's the group that did that?
It was just a guy on YouTube
who put it together.
I'm thinking if it's a legitimate rock band,
how do you get them to go in a studio and sing "The Wheels on the Bus Go Round and Round" all day long?
I love it. All right.
Keep in mind, in the music video, he's actually on a bus. Like, in the aisle. It's an empty bus, but he's on a bus.
Oh, thank goodness.
Well, you know what? The buses here in Arizona are anything but empty.
Nice segue, by the way.
Yeah, I should probably do this for a living, and I should also probably get my paper off the floor.
Well, in the meantime, we can talk about, while you're getting your paper off the floor, you're right. There is a huge bus driver shortage, and it's impacting schools and kids. And it's not a new problem either, because I think every year we hear about districts desperate to find bus drivers.
Yeah, we hear about districts being desperate for teachers. We know that there's a massive teacher shortage in the state. And I know that there's been issues with bus drivers because there's advertisements everywhere for it. But I got to admit, Jeff, I had no idea it was as big of a problem as it's become. Scottsdale Unified School District sent a letter home to parents at the beginning of the school year saying, yep, we're still going to be able to provide daily transportation, not always in a timely fashion as we would prefer. Scottsdale says they're short about 17 drivers. Surprise, are going out in the West Valley. They're down about 26. And Mesa, which is the largest school district in the state that transports some 35,000 students every day, they're in need of about 55 drivers. So what's going on here? Why are we seeing this shortage? A shortage that is making drivers pick up more routes. It means the kids are on that bus a lot longer than usual. Those buses are jam-packed. Well, it's the recovering economy.
Yeah, it's really interesting to say that it's the economy, but it is. And a lot of it just has to do with there are so many better things that a person can do to earn money than drive a school bus full of kids that a lot of them are they're troublemakers, basically.
I mean, listen, if you've got a commercial license here in the state of Arizona, Arizona CDL, you can earn a lot more driving in the private sector than you can for school districts. And that is why people who have that kind of license are going more towards the private industry to make more money. And then you also think about it this way, too. Okay, you got your CDL, and so you're going to be driving some sort of like massive truck or a bus. Do you really want to be dealing with kids?
Right.
And I rode the bus growing up. I hated it. And I don't use that word often. I got a 9-year-old. I got to be careful when I use the word hate. I hated riding the bus. Hated it. Yeah. It was brutal. Especially the kids in the very last seat on the bus.
Right.
Like, you know what? You knew that they were future felons sitting in the last seat on the bus,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay. You know how this goes. Oh, I hated the bus. I'm glad I don't have to subject my daughter to it. But as much as I hated it, I can only imagine what the driver felt like. Because there were many a times, Jeff, where they pulled over on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And they got up and they yelled at us. There was no air conditioning on that bus. And they yelled at it and they sat there and then they threatened to turn this bus around. And a couple times they did. I would not wish being a school bus driver on anyone. But then there are those people who, you know, have been riding that route for years.
Right.
And they've become like a fixture within that little community. And the parents all know the driver, and the driver gives out candy on the holidays. And, you know what, it's kind of like a part of the kids' day-to-day activities. But the stress and the inconsistency of schedules, and a lot of those drivers are also getting older.
Right.
And with the added stress, they're going, it's just not worth it.
But you hit on a key thing. If you have to get a specialized license to drive a school bus, mm-hmm. and I don't want to equate this directly to driving a semi-truck, an 18-wheeler, but there's, I mean, it maneuvering a school bus is a little bit like, I think, like trying to drive a big rig truck.
You put me in a regular size SUV and I feel like I'm driving a big rig truck. I could not drive a bus.
Right. So you mentioned it a second ago. If you're going to get trained to drive a vehicle that size, wouldn't it be more advantageous to drive for a private company? You're probably going to make better money. You're not going to have behavioral issues with anybody that's riding with you. And it's to me, and that's the other thing. You get on a school bus, there is no other adult. It's the bus driver versus how many ever kids. And it's unfortunate. You're right. There have been instances where bus drivers are considered part of the community. Everybody loves them. But those instances are few and far between.
Well, you know what? It's getting to the point now where districts are having to make some adjustments. Scottsdale Unified, again, we talked about this a little bit earlier. They authorized an 11% salary increase. And they even have like a stipend for like longevity and loyalty. So the starting salary for new drivers is going to be about $15.30 an hour. Okay. But a bus driver in Dysart starts off at $15.60 an hour. And you even got some over there making, you know, $22.50 an hour. It's one of these things where it's competitive. This is something I wouldn't have necessarily thought of. And probably because, you know, my daughter doesn't ride the bus. And so I'm not impacted by it in that regard. But it's a trickle down, too, because there's one parent who had said that because of the inconsistency and the frustration of, the route being extended and the kids being on the bus a really long time, you know, she decided to drop her kid off and pick her kid up from school. Well, then you have more parents that are dropping off and picking up, and then you got longer lines, and you see how this kind of all compounds itself. And then you also have a safety issue as well. I was reading, it wasn't necessarily anywhere here in Arizona, but as I was reading up on the story, I was seeing that there were some districts out there across the country, because Arizona's not the only one who's experiencing this right now, but they're packing more and more kids onto buses.
That's
and now you're getting into a
safe.
Safety issue where you've got some kids sitting on the floor.
Oh.
And then you've got, you know, those buses, I remember, like, you're supposed to put, like, three in a seat, which was hard to do when you got into, like, junior high and high school.
Right.
Because you got big kids, and they're even putting even more kids in those seats.
Now, we had a story, and I think it was one of the days that I was filling in here. It might have been with Bruce, where there's a shortage of truck drivers now in America because of the increase in online shopping, and there's the need to ship items across the country. And I go back to what I said. If you're going to learn to drive a large vehicle, you probably would be advantageous to look into driving a truck or working for a private company as opposed to driving a school bus. And by the way, I have so much respect for people who drive trucks. I've always loved to drive. I love to travel. I always thought that would really be kind of cool. But it's a tough job. Maneuvering a vehicle like that is really tough. So I just want my friends out there who are truck drivers to know I have so much respect for them.
And I've got so much compassion for the bus drivers out there having to deal with that many kids. Oh, I'll tell you. All right. So coming up next, we all spell words wrong. I mean, sometimes, but this typo is pretty amazing.
Oh, I want to get away. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yeah, but if you want to get away, how much confidence would you have in the plane that you're getting on if the company can't even spell the company correctly on the side of the aircraft? This is what's happened, apparently, in Hong Kong.
This is one way for an airline to increase its name recognition. Misspell your own name.
At Cathay Pacific, the world is at our fingertips.
But painters apparently didn't have an F at their fingertips, resulting in Cathay Pacific instead of Pacific.
Yeah, they spelled Pacific wrong. They didn't put the F in it. They put two I's instead of an F. And pictures started surfacing on social. It was being shared. And it looked like it was such an epic mix-up, which I don't know how that happens, Jeff. Jeff Munn sitting in with me here today. Like, don't you have checks and like measures going on here to make sure that you don't spell your company wrong on the side of a plane?
And I look at this now, and I think to myself, do you notice, by the way, that there's a huge gap between, in this picture, between the words Cathay and P-A-C-I-I-C? It's almost as if, and it, the first thing I thought of when I saw this was, this had to be a put-on. Not that the photo, the picture was altered. But that this had
purpose?
To have been done deliberately.
Okay, well, you know what? There's a little bit of controversy going on here, and people are suspecting this, right? There was an engineer who works for a subsidiary of this airline, and he said that the spacing is too on point for a mishap. We have stencils. There should be a blank gap in between some letters if there was a real mistake. All right, so did this company screw it up on purpose? Because when was the last time we were talking about, I don't even know, like Cathay Pacific plane? All right, like
they don't fly here, so
right, they're in Hong Kong,
right?
So is this a hoax? I don't know. Or did they do it on purpose to get some attention? That seems dumb to me, but it's quite possible.
Airlines, though, and I'm not singling out airlines, but every once in a while, you find an airline that does something just for laughs. How often has Southwest done things that are funny and just to get your attention, you know, to a degree? I mean, I don't know if Southwest really needs to get any more attention because their flights are all booked. But I've seen airlines do this where they'll come up with some goofy idea
Schtick.
To get your attention.
Cathay Pacific itself tweeted the mistake, saying, oops, this special livery won't last long. She's going back to the shop.
Celebrating the new colors of Cathay Pacific.
The internet celebrated the mistake. Welcome to the new Cathay, where we give no F. Someone else inserted the F with the notation, fixed it.
All right. Okay. So whether it was a shtick or not, nowadays, we've got autocorrect. I mean, obviously, you don't have autocorrect or spell check on the side of a plane,
right?
But we can auto-check, spell check everything. And frankly, if I'm getting like a text message or an email from, let's say, you know, you, Jeff, or super producer Stevie Z or Bruce, and there's a misspelling, I don't care. All right. Text messages, you know, quick text messages. You're like, okay, fine, whatever. But there are certain individuals that if they misspell a word, man, does it set off some like red flags for me. Like my daughter's teacher, for instance.
Right.
And not that it's happened, but if I were to get an email or a letter or something from one of my daughter's educators that had a misspelling in it, I'd be like, what is going on? And frankly, as a manager here at KTAR for quite a few years, I would have had to go through a lot of the intern applications and job applications for reporters and anchors and things along those lines.
Right.
And if you misspelled something, yeah, no.
On your resume.
Absolutely. On that resume, on your application, no. You go to the bottom of the pile.
You know, it's interesting, and we're in a business, in an industry where we do a lot of writing. Journalism is an industry, a profession that relies on accuracy. And so I'm surprised, because I freak out anytime somebody misspells something.
Anybody.
On a text.
Oh,
I
really?
Don't always correct them, but I go, because I'm
you're be
such
doing that a
freakazoid about spell it right, use proper grammar, you know, because I use words
though?
In my, you know, I use words for a living.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, have you seen it professionally, though?
Oh, yes, I have this week.
this week.
Are we on in Seattle, by the way?
The university, I don't think the signal carries that far.
In preparing for this Saturday's ASU-Washington football game, coverage starts at 5:30 on ESPN 620, by the way.
Nice job.
Thank you. The University of Washington game notes have three, count them, three typos in it.
Well, and, what do you expect from the University of Washington?
I didn't say that.
I did. I'm allowed to.
But the
Go Devils.
Thank you. But the thing is, and I used to be in that line of work, putting out game notes every week, and I kind of understand it in a way. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You're trying to get everything set up to where the notes can go out the next day to the media, and you're going to miss something.
But you're also a representation of the entire university. I just blasted them here, and I know I'm going to be getting emails from people, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if you are representing yourself as a brand through a resume, if you are representing yourself as an authority figure in education, if you're representing yourself in the university for game notes, get it right. If I misspell, hey, I'm running late, you know, in a text message, whatevs. But if you
I let it go. I just kind of go.
If you're tasked with putting a company name on the side of an airplane, that had to have been a hoax. That had to have been
it
staged.
Had to.
It had to have been.
Maybe they're rebranding.
I don't think so.
Like IHOB.
Okay, touche.
Oh,
Super
boy.
Producer Stevie Z is on fire today. My goodness. All right. Hey, you know, there was a company we told you about a little while ago that offers to microchip its employees. Yes, some people actually did this. Well, they got a new plan for keeping track of your kids. We'll tell you about their idea next here on KTAR.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yeah, we're trying to get some perspective on some new technology, new apps that are out there. Some are just kind of a new version of technology and apps that are already out there. And for this discussion, I want to take you to Wisconsin and a company there that is better known for microchipping their employees. Literally, this company gave their employees an opportunity to be microchipped. I believe it was in their finger so that they could just, you know, if you've got security doors like we do here at the at the radio station, you know, you just instead of having to get out your badge, you just put your little finger there. Or if you need to log onto a computer, you just put your finger there. And I would never do that. And it still amazes me that others would. But it's that company that has come up with another app. Now, an app that is going to sound vaguely familiar in a variety of different ways, but it's called Mom, I Am Okay. Right off the bat, that's just odd to me. Here's what it would do. It allows parents to set agreed upon check-ins with their kids or, you know, their loved ones, whoever has it. Now, the check-ins arrive in the form of like a push notification, right? So you'll get a push notification asking whether or not you're safe. If you do not respond yes to that notification, then the app can determine everywhere that person has been and then deliver that information to loved ones or law enforcement officials. It can also let parents know if their child has left a particular area. So let's say you've got a driver, a teenage driver, and you say, yeah, you can go to Susie's house, but, you know, no going anywhere else. Well, you can set some limits, and if they go outside of that limit, you're going to get an alert. Now, I see value. I can't see value in some of this. Right now, I've got a 9-year-old, and I am not of the mindset of tracking. That may change as she gets older. Full disclosure, not exactly sure, but I know that there are different, apps. Like, for instance, if I'm going somewhere by myself, Jeff, and, you know, I'm a little hesitant, I'm not exactly sure, you know, it's just me, I will send my husband a notification on, you know, find my friends and send my location so that he can track me for an hour or all day. Like, you can set limitations on it.
Sure.
But my husband doesn't track me. I don't share that. Not that I have anything to hide, but it's just, to me, it's a whole creep factor of just tracking where someone's at all times.
Well, I see your point. With young kids, with little kids, the parental instinct takes over and says, yeah, I want to know where they are. at the same time as they get older. I understand your point about maybe when Riley gets older, you may rethink, you know.
I don't know yet.
And
I can admit that.
When my kids were in their high school years, I don't remember being that concerned about it.
Well, I mean, let me give you an example, okay? Yesterday, rain all over the valley, right? And I left the station and I went to pick up my daughter because I'm very blessed to be able to pick her up from school every day. And the pickup place had changed because I was doing walk up. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that. I parked where I normally park. It's a different place. And as I was driving to park, I got a phone number that I didn't recognize. So what do? I send you a voicemail. And then I get a voicemail. And the cute little voice was, "Hi, Mommy. I just want to let you know they changed walk up. You need to go to the gate instead of here." And I was like, wow, okay. I have no idea who, you know, whose phone she used. It ended up she used her teacher's phone. She was quite concerned that I wouldn't know where to pick her up. And we got in the car and I said, "Hey, Riley. Good job. Good job for using your resources. There was a problem and you had a concern and you don't have a phone," because I would never give a 9-year-old a phone, "and you problem solved it."
Right.
Well, that builds confidence for her because she was in a situation that she didn't know how to handle. It wasn't dire, but she handled it. And now she's building that confidence of, now I know how to handle it.
Right.
And I don't know if tracking kids takes some of that away. Now, I've talked on this show a lot about, you know, my issues with technology, and so I don't want it just to be a one-way discussion. So I want to invite Bob McClay, our awesome anchor here on the Bruce St. James Pamela Hughes Show. And you have a very different approach than I do, and so I want to make sure we're presenting both sides of this issue.
We've had apps for several years since my son has, maybe was around 9 years old.
Did he have a phone then?
He had a phone, but
really?
It was for... We had a phone app called Chaperone through Verizon. We found it to be unreliable, but it did just that. It sent us messages when he arrived at school and when he left school. Now, when he arrived at school, I took him to school. Mom picked him up. But if there was any reason that he left the school between those times, we would have gotten a message. It was one funny way that it was unreliable is one time he going on a vacation to Orlando. He got off the plane in Orlando, and we got notified that he had left the school.
Awesome. Good job
he
there.
He was in Orlando.
That's a little off.
You know, I'm not trying to put you on blast here or hang you out there, Bob, in any way, shape, or form. I'm trying to understand. What was the motivation for using these types of apps with your son?
Making sure my son was safe.
Why did you feel like he was in inherent danger at all times that
we
you needed to track?
We just wanted to make sure that if somebody, got him out of school, in the school they had to go into the office and check in and sign him out and stuff like that. Well, if he was going to be signed out, I knew about it. My wife knew about it. And if somebody else was signing him out, there was a problem if he had left the school. Fortunately, it didn't happen that way. But we have continued using the app. Right now, I have an app called Life 360. It's similar to Find a Friend.
Uh-huh.
You and I were talking about that you use Find a Friend. And we've had that, too. Right now on Life 360, I can tell where my wife is. She can tell where I am. I've got my in-laws. I've got my sister-in-law.
Wow!
And wow! You know where all of your family members are right now?
I know where they all are right now.
And they've all agreed to this, obviously.
And we've all agreed to it.
See, wow!
There is an unreliable factor to it. Is this phone will sit right here during my entire shift? But yet I will look at it and it says that I'm out in the parking lot or
other
area of the building.
Yeah, I don't need my in-laws and everybody to know where I'm at every single day. I mean, to each their own, man. I mean, what works in your house works in your house. What works in my house works in my house. But wow, that's fascinating.
When your kid's in college and he's away at college right now.
You do it in college?
He's in college right
now.
Well,
it gives you peace of mind.
Where were you at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, no, man. I don't want to know where my kid's at 2 a.m. They're going to start making some decisions on their own at that age, in my opinion. To each their own, but hey, you know what?
Well,
we're talking about schools.
Know.
We got to move on, though, man. We're talking about schools, and Doug Ducey now is offering some support for charter schools, which is a huge change from where he's been. We'll talk about it next.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
I've got Jeff Munn helping me hold it down here today. Bruce a little under the weather. But we want to talk about charter schools here in the state of Arizona. Arizona has a huge school choice program. And so they've got open enrollment. So if you want to go to a school outside of your district boundaries, you can if they've got space for you. We've got over 500 plus charter schools. And, you know, you also have your private schools. Okay, so education, a big hot topic in Arizona right now in the wake of Red for Ed. What's interesting to me right now, Jeff, is that Democrats in our state legislature for years have tried to pass reforms when it comes to charter schools, because charter schools don't play by the same rules as public schools, in particular when it comes to money. They get a little bit more per pupil. Okay, that's not the big issue in my book. In my book, it's the lack of transparency. In public schools, we know where the money is going, and in charter schools, they are not held to that same transparency standard, and that's perfectly legal. Well, we now have a Republican state senator who says that she wants to push for some changes in the Arizona charter school laws. It's interesting that it's a Republican, because Republicans have typically not been in support of this kind of reform. And what else is interesting about this, Jeff, is that Governor Doug Ducey seems to be backing this reform.
And up until that point, he's always been a strong advocate of charter schools.
Yeah.
But has and because of that, he's been kind of willing to let them do what they want to do and not interfere too much, and wasn't concerned about transparency. But you're right. He apparently had a meeting with State Senator Kate Brophy McGee on this subject, and seems to be, according to his office, in agreement with her that some reform is needed.
Now, that would be great. And I would love for that to happen. I'm not saying that all charter schools are shady, but there most definitely are some that I believe are when it comes to handling their money. But you also have to take a look at the facts of this situation. And this year, Democrats in the state Senate pushed for over 10 different charter school reform bills. All were killed by Republicans in leadership. So why now? Why now do you have a state senator, as well as the governor, who are backing reform when before they haven't? Could it be because that same state senator is running for re-election against a former Arizona Teacher of the Year, and that governor is running for re-election against a Democrat who is really entrenched in education in the state of Arizona, with this issue becoming so big? Is this a little bit of lip service for the next couple of weeks until we vote? And then if they get reelected, it goes back to the way it was? Or is this real change?
I think that your first part, I think, is absolutely correct. I think this becomes a more hot button topic for candidates like Senator McGee, Governor Ducey, because this is an education election. It's going to be topic 1, 2, 3, and 4. In November, certainly in the governor's race. And if it's in the governor's race, it's probably going to trickle down to a lot of legislative races, both in the Senate and the House. I don't think there's any question that that's what's driving this.
And you know what? That's a little disheartening. Now, if in fact these individuals are concerned and do want some change, at least transparency. Listen, if nothing changes except for the fact that we now know for a fact where that money is going, I'm okay with that. Just let us know why the secrecy behind it all. But we could have done this, and the state legislator could have done this several times over the last several years. It seems quite convenient to me. A little over a month, month and a half out from an election that we're talking about reform in the charter schools, when these individuals in the past haven't really had much concern about it. If it is a better late than never type of situation, I'm in. All right. So you've seen the light. Great.
Right.
But if this is a political ploy to get votes, which my spidey senses are tingling on that.
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
Yeah. And it's something that goes on all the time in political circles, that you do this. And then as soon as you get elected, it tends to kind of fade away. But I will say this, too. I would think my daughter attended a charter school in 7th and 8th grade. Mm-hmm. Wonderful place. They did a terrific job. And I would think schools like that, that have good reputations, they'd want transparency, too, because it's those rotten charter schools that are dragging everybody else down.
Yeah, this is not an indictment on all 500-plus charter schools. I know that there are some fantastic ones, not only in the state, but in the Valley in particular, some fantastic ones. But I understand why they get more money than public schools. That's not even the issue that I have. It's just, what are you doing with that money? Public schools have to tell you how much of that money is going into the classroom.
Right.
I want to know how much of that money from charter schools is going into the classroom. And I don't think that that's an unrealistic expectation.
Not at all. And I would, like I say, I would think that most charter schools would be okay with it because it eliminates the stigma and the mystery.
But is it a change of heart or is it, I want your vote? We'll see. Time will tell. Time will tell. Time will also tell whether or not the accuser against Brett Kavanaugh will show up for a hearing. There is a deadline. We'll tell you what it is and what the very latest has been coming up next on KTAR.